Koji is a venture capital firm cultivating community. This podcast is dedicated to cultivating conversations. Web 3.0 is democratizing the internet, and Koji Conversations is here to democratize access to the founders, investors, and creators building it from the ground up. Welcome back to Koji Conversations. My name is Jack, and today we speak with the founder of Digital Axe, Emma Jane. Digital Axe is a Web3 fashion operating system, a decentralized protocol for unlocking interoperable economies involving fashion, gaming, modding, NFT, DeFis, and DAOs. This podcast is best viewed as your introduction to the Web3 fashion space. Emma Jane with Digital Axe is not just building one area of this market. Emma Jane with Digital Axe is really trying to support this whole growing subsegment of the Web3 narrative. So in this conversation, we touch on some of the big key points, which is the open versus closed metaverse, what the distinction between them are, and what it really means to be building the open metaverse. From there, we go into a deep dive on Web3 fashion. We go to understand all the pain points in Web3 fashion and how Digital Axe is addressing all of those in an extremely decentralized, permissionless, and community-oriented manner. We also touch on the whole Digital Axe ecosystem, how it works cohesively, and how anyone, regardless of your creativity skills, regardless of your time and participation requirements, can participate in growing this nascent industry and become a prominent community contributor. So without further ado, here's the conversation with Emma Jane from Digital Axe. Emma Jane, thank you so much for coming on Koji Conversations. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here. Been a little bit of a back and forth, but super excited to finally have the opportunity to speak to you and have the listeners gain some insight into how knowledgeable you are when it comes to the Web3 industry. So Emma, yeah, cheers for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Jack, for bringing me on the show. Really excited to get to kind of talk more about Web3 fashion because it is a very new industry. Digital Axe is definitely ahead of its time. And the protocol has only been live for 1 year. Actually, today is the anniversary
day.
And so, yeah, I mean, definitely kind of propelling things forward in open Web3 metaverse is something that we're excited about.
Yeah, there's so many things that you just touched on there, and I'm keen to go through those during this episode. But I guess just to start off with Digital Axe, let's get the elevator pitch. How would you pitch it in about 1 to 2 minutes?
Sure. Well, I wouldn't say it's more like a pitch itself, but to give more of an explanation about what we are building. We are a protocol on top of Ethereum and Polygon network. And the best way to describe it is that we are building a minimal viable ecosystem for Web3 fashion in the open metaverse. So what does that include? Well, multiple different components, but some of those are a NFT fashion marketplace that is powered by a global designer network DAO, which is hundreds of digital and physical Web3 fashion designers coming together to transform really the merchant activity within fashion itself. So instead of it being exploitative and controlled by big brands at the top, it's really focused on powering the indie designer scene and how they can release products, utility to the market, and then share an ownership with the buyers and wearers of those products. And then on top of that, really about bringing these kind of fashion items and NFTs directly into the metaverse and interoperable virtual environments. So there's a few ways that we're doing that. Number one is through quests to earn and wear to earn models. So these are like derivatives of play to earn. Think about like kind of putting your fashion to work for you, where you can take these items into gaming and other virtual environments and then actually kind of earn crypto yield, which is through Esper, our decentralized esports platforms, and also Pode, which is really focused on the virtual land offering side for different kind of metaverse realms. And then on top of that as well, we also have focus on the physical fashion side and how this intersects with DeFi. So we have like a drip physical fashion marketplace, which also these NFTs can be staked for DeFi yield. And I'm trying to kind of think about all the components of our ecosystem, also a in-house metaverse publishing platform, DigiFizzy, which is really about bringing more content, advancing Web3 principles on releasing this to the market, and also kind of highlighting more of the Web3 fashion industry. And then also Dash, which is kind of really focused on more of the technical side of interoperability, which is a really big part of just the metaverse itself, and building out these like lower level layer infrastructure is how do you actually take these assets cross-platform. We have like an open source, dynamic and interoperable transformation file format architecture, which is really being built to then, yeah, allow for, say, if you have a fashion item that can be taken in one game, to then be able to wear it all across in these different realms. So that's a high level.
I love it. There's so many things going on. And there's also the Look project as well, which you're doing as well. I mean, the digital AX ecosystem is massive. If you haven't gone and checked out Digital AX, I definitely implore you to do so, because you'll understand that Emma's really not focusing on like the marketplace, but she's really focusing on supporting this whole nascent industry, which is Web3 fashion, and really trying to sort of provoke or stir long-term sustainability in the industry. So I think what I'd like to touch on is maybe something that's quite topical. So obviously Facebook has changed their name, or the parent company entity, to Meta, posted that 1 hour long video on how they're going to be sort of entering the metaverse. And then it brings forward the question of what the difference is between the open and closed metaverse. So there's no doubt in my mind that you're definitely building towards an open metaverse. Would you be able to just to sort of, I guess, describe what the difference is between an open and closed metaverse, and then where you and Digital AX and Web3 fashion sort of sits in that whole ecosystem?
Yeah, really good question, because if we look back kind of like 1 year ago today, it was really the question of people kind of wondering, well, what is the metaverse, and is the metaverse even something that's going to materialize or happen? And now we fast forward, and it's no longer a question of if, it's more like when. What's the accelerated version of the timeline, and how can we move things along faster to get to the stage where we can all interact with this persistent kind of like multidimensional time and space? Facebook, with their announcement, or as you said, kind of the name change to Meta, and they're kind of putting a $10 trillion bet, almost even more, on that this is actually happening. It's like, if it wasn't already clear before, it's very clear now that the starting gun has fired. And when you talk about, okay, the open versus closed metaverse, it's a really important question, because it affects all of us. If we think about Web2, this is really an example of a completely closed system. The incentive mechanisms are set up to benefit the very kind of select few at the top. And then if you're not in that group, then it's not good. You mean, you have kind of this idea of it being zero sum, it being destructive of the commons in a sense. And it really is this race to control all the choke points. And if you're not one of these peoples, these individuals, these corporates, these vulture capitalists controlling the choke point, then you lose out. But what Web3 allows is for the first time, it's this full transformation, really through leveraging principles of the blockchain itself. When we think of transparency, provenance, ownership, even being able to like convey and record value through containers like NFTs, for example. It allows anyone to participate in this economy and then generate wealth through that. But the wealth that is being generated is no longer destructive to others around them. Instead, it's generative, and it's more interoperable, I would say, as well, with kind of different ecosystems and realms. It's no longer about being exploitative and extractive silos, which is really how you benefit in Web2. It's how that whole incentive model is set up. And so when we think about then an open metaverse, it really is something that is being built so it leverages decentralized tech, it leverages decentralization, it advances Web3, so anyone can come in and take part in this economy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, to simplify that, the way that I like to think about it, I guess in a soundbite, is Web2 is very much capturing communities and exploiting communities. And then Web3 is very much providing the infrastructure for, you know, communities to be empowered, and for individuals, if they so choose, to be sovereign. And yeah, the Web3 space, especially the metaverse as well, is a super unique way for individuals to become empowered and also interact with each other while retaining ownership over, you know, the value that they create and the assets that they use inside these realms. And I think Because the metaverse is starting to prove itself out, right? And that's happened extremely recently, or it seems to have happened quite recently, that there's a lot of attention drawn to the metaverse. And I think there's an area in the metaverse, especially like the one that you operate in, right? Web3 fashion, that hasn't yet caught the light, but 100% will. It makes a lot of sense. And I think you describe it really well with how you are liking just fashion's, I guess, place in society in general. So I guess my question to you is, what role does fashion play in society? And with sort of this introduction of this digital realm, how does that transition into Web3 fashion? And then I guess going into what you're building at Digital AX.
Sure. Yeah. So Web3 fashion, the best way to think about it, and again, this kind of sounds broad and it can be hard to conceptualize because it is something that is a newer concept. It's fashion that advances Web3 principles. So it's fashion that in terms of how it's operated or how people can wear and interact with it, it benefits those that are designing it, creating it, buying it, collecting it, wearing it, and then using it across the metaverse itself. But it is an industry that is founded on decentralized principles, where again, kind of going back to like what is an open metaverse instead of it, and as you said, rather than kind of capturing communities, it's really about empowering everyone that is actually part of that ecosystem. And some of those features include it being more bottom up. So when we think about the traditional fashion industry, it's very much top down. You have these few players at the top that are dictating what happens when, whether that be exploitation, unsustainability along the supply chain itself, whether that be saying, well, this is how we define luxury, this is how we define the trends. If you want to actually, as a designer, come into the industry, you have to follow this framework, and if not, you'll be shunned out completely. And it really feels this complete fear with designers themselves, and it's why the industry is just so kind of sickening in so many ways. It's definitely not like supportive and generative. And so Web3 fashion is turning that whole thing on its head, and it's using features like DAOs, NFTs, DeFi, other kind of really important components of the blockchain itself, which allows it to be composable, which means that anyone now, and it really makes it kind of, it broadens the base and democratizes everything. So anyone can now come in, whether that be as a designer, a wearer, collector, buyer, and feel empowered by it, actually be able to generate wealth, prosperity, using kind of these different conduits of value. And then in terms of DigitalX, well, really our focus is building out these protocol level layers or the infrastructure itself to allow this industry to exist, to ensure that it is decentralized from the get-go. And it isn't just kind of like a Web2 simp where we're saying that we're being, you know, we're using blockchain or we're minting NFTs, because that's very different than actually founding a Web3 fashion industry. And a really kind of good analogy of that is there is digital fashion. And digital fashion is really what you can like consider is used in, like, for example, gaming, skins. If you think about having an avatar in the metaverse, you will have digital fashion itself that we worn across these different metaversal realms, even kind of hybrid digital physical when we think about AR and like different kind of mechanisms around there. But it's not digital fashion in itself is not something that is really transforming the industry as it is, because digital fashion has existed for a number of years and it never took off. It really was just, the reason kind of how it came into existence, it was really about a sustainability aspect, where instead of it being the supply chain itself being incredibly unsustainable in traditional fashion, it was about really making kind of a rapid prototyping process. So instead of all this wasted materials, how do you transform that into a digital software? So designers can kind of mix and match with different ideas of the garment and then only create physically the final version instead of kind of like all of these replaceable versions in between. And then it really shifted after that into more like this freelancing and kind of advertising, more like commercial kind of relationship, where it was like designers would come in and they would like make garments that would be used in like commercials and advertisements for larger brands. But it never took off because there was never a way to really attach and embed the value layer within digital fashion itself.
Yep.
It didn't make sense. And that's really what Web3 has like kind of completely transformed the entire thing. And so Web3 fashion is not about taking digital fashion and minting the digital fashion garments as NFTs and then taking them into games. It's really about at every stage of the process, how we actually advancing Web3 principles to make sure that this new industry and this new world is fully decentralized.
Yeah, and I think I mean, that's a great point. And I think just to carry on from that, there's a couple of things that you're doing in particular that are super interesting that are pushing forward that Web3 sort of narrative. One of which is like the fractional garment ownership. I think that's awesome. And I think the second one as well is this dash file format. I think it'd be awesome to go into both of those and sort of get your, I guess, the high level mental model that you have in both of those industries and where you're trying to push them, or both of those tooling rather.
Sure. Yeah. So you mean in terms of like what are kind of the different sectors or initiatives and that we're bringing forth?
Yeah, definitely. Especially with, just starting off with fractional garment ownership, right? Instead of sort of having, I guess, one designer design this full fashion item and then having no secondary market sales or sort of revenue in perpetuity, how your marketplace is changing that and how different type of designers on different levels of the file format can come together using ERC 1155s to create sort of this ERC 998 variant.
Sure. Yeah, really good question. So fractional garment ownership is all about composability, and it's all about really understanding what is the medium that Web3 fashion exists in, which is really like Web3 itself. So technology like DLTs, like blockchain, and it's looking at how do we actually leverage features of the blockchain itself to create and kind of install new concepts that then reinforce this idea of advancing Web3, but also bringing in different incentive mechanisms that allow designers, creators, wearers to actually then be able to interact with fashion in completely new ways and then generate all forms of prosperity from that. So what fractional garment ownership really it touches on is composability itself within fashion, and how do we actually unfreeze more of the value along the supply chain in a way that then promotes creative supply. So any designer can come in. They're not kind of, how do I say this? There's not these huge barriers or friction when you think about, well, where are they in their creative process or their journey? But instead they can even be able to issue, for example, something as simple as a digital material pattern or texture into the supply chain and then have that backed or minted as an 1155 NFT that in itself is representing this conduit of value. And then what that allows for is once you have that recorded on the blockchain itself and in that like transparent ledger, it means, and you have that provenance, it means that other designers can now come into this, say, for example, open source library where designers like minting 1155s of patterns, material, and textures into entirely like open source library itself. Other designers can come and take these different patterns and materials and then use them to form their master garment. So again, they're not kind of cut out of the creation process itself by having to put up large amounts of like money for access to resources or these like nascent tools that are required to really create and design within the industry. And they can then come and form these master garments. And what the blockchain allows and kind of how we've set it up is then this master garment is minted as an ERC 721 NFT, which actually owns a balance of the 1155 patterns, materials, and textures that were used. And what that means is that final point of sale, there can now be a value layer added in to that kind of like whole open source and accessible content itself along the supply chain. So we can remove all the barriers and all the friction and say, hey, anyone can come in, but it's still, there's perimeters around how we actually are able to transfer and record that value, which means that that final point of sale, there can be a fractional royalty split between everyone that contributed to the fashion or garment itself. And then that means like entirely new revenue streams or income streams for every designer along the supply chain process itself. So instead of how we think about like in traditional fashion, you have to be really situated at specific points in the supply chain in order to see any value. If you're just like a worker, you know, kind of stitching away in like a large factory, you're being heavily exploited and no one, you don't see any value back, frankly. But this way, you're breaking everything down into smaller components and saying, removing all these barriers and then creating so much more value from that as well, because yeah, it's really completely bottom up.
Yeah, and I think that's such a huge piece. I was thinking the other night, just for example, if I was a producer of raw materials, for example, the only sale that I get in terms of my contribution to the traditional fashion industry is that of I'm the wholesaler buying my raw products, for example. And I think in the Web3 fashion context, it's really cool because I could just be, you know, creating textures, and instead of only getting that initial sale, I can get sales on anyone that uses our texture, which is what I'd usually be accustomed to or usually have access to in the traditional sense. But then any sort of resale on top of that, is also coming back to me because I still, you know, contributed to whatever piece of that final garment is. And it's really cool to see how deeply you're focusing on the, I guess, ideologies of composability and interoperability within the space. And I think the other huge component that I find super interesting is this idea of interoperability between different gaming engines and how these file formats interact with that. And yeah, it's really cool to see you pushing that narrative and really devoting a lot of time to make sure that there's a lot of interoperability between these different gaming engines. I think it would be great for the listeners to understand what the current issue is with interoperability between different gaming engines and then what you're doing to try and solve that issue.
Yeah, no, really good point, because again, like going back to, if we think about how do you actually build the open metaverse, interoperability is absolutely like essential, key, fundamental, because frankly, if you don't have interoperability, then all you have is silos again, which is really like what is in Web 2. And then this is where top-down structures can form and the incentives get completely thrown off. And so there's different layers of interoperability, but what you mentioned with Dash, we're really focused in one part of our ecosystem on looking at the technical interoperability layer itself, because right now file format transfer and exchange between different game engine softwares, it's definitely not optimized. It almost is kind of non-existent, where you can't just like design a, say, garment or any 3D asset, or really any asset content, like digital content asset itself, say in one platform and then drag and drop that into the other. And when we think about then like the value layer as part of that, it doesn't really make sense, because if I take like an example from the physical world, it's like, you know, you went into a clothing store and you bought a t-shirt, and then on the t-shirt, there was like terms and conditions being like, hey, you can only wear this in this house, for example. And as soon as you take it out, it's going to explode. You'd be like, why the heck would I wear that t-shirt? It doesn't make any sense. You know, it's the ability, because I have kind of complete provenance over it and ownership. That's really what generates so much of the value. And so then we transfer that to digital and we think, well, it really doesn't make sense for there not to be a way for these assets to be able to have liquidity and volume in transfer between different realms in the metaverse and different engines, softwares, applications, environments, so on and so forth. And so what DigitalX is really focused on is building out this technical layer that then can allow for content to be easily transferred. And the way that we're doing that is through Dash. And Dash is a file format transfer architecture. It's not a standard because we don't believe that the metaverse is going to be built on just a few standards itself. Because again, that's not decentralization. It's not about being able to really take ownership and agency as a creator or anyone interacting with the ecosystem to be able to build and design, you know, whatever you want, or take forth whatever you want. Instead, it's going to be about having all of this kind of dynamism and dynamism of content as well. So what Dash does, it's all about transformations. It allows for creators to be able to come in into the system, submit content, and it goes through this kind of opinionated logic transformation set that can actually be contributed to, or mathematical models can actually be contributed to by engineers, researchers, developers. And there's a whole crypto incentive value layer on top of that, which also incentivizes these like engineers, devs, and that to come in and contribute mathematical models, and then be rewarded for ones that have this dynamic interoperability across different game engines and environments themselves. So it's very cool, and we're actually forming Dash into a DAO, and yeah, like
awesome.
Open sourcing the entire thing.
Yeah, awesome. I think it makes so much sense that that has to be the case that plays out. It's very much sort of like, say you own a CryptoPunk or a Bored Ape Yacht Club, for example, and it would, I guess in the PFP sense, it would be, you can use that profile picture on Twitter, but you can't use it in Discord. You can use it on Facebook, but you can't use it on LinkedIn. It makes no sense, especially because your identity, which is such a huge point of what fashion really is, it's honing in on your identity. It's a way to display who you are and I guess what your tastes are at a deeper level. If you can't display that everywhere in sort of the VR metaverse, it sort of fragments your identity and it forces you to do things that would otherwise should be frictionless. Another way that I sort of look at that problem as well is it's sort of having this multi-chain future obviously we've got like Polygon that you're building on, you've got Ethereum, you've got Solana, you've got Avalanche, you've got a lot of side chains popping up, and it would be a similar sort of scenario if there weren't frictionless bridges between them, allowing people to take the opportunities that are present in other blockchains as well. So yeah, it makes sense to have a file format like that. And it's really cool to see you building that out, especially pushing into a DAO format as well, allowing people that are providing the value to also have a say on the direction of how that moves in the future. So yeah, I think it's just so cool how much you're building here. And I guess the way that I sort of look at DigitalX, what you've built, is it's not just a single product, but you're really sort of building this whole ecosystem and this whole industry from the ground up. And I guess everything that you've sort of already presented and everything that you and your team and the people around you have built in this space is so immensely valuable. And I think when this ecosystem really kicks off, a lot of what you've built here are going to be laying down the foundations of how it succeeds in the future. So yeah, I guess that's just a general thank you for what you've done for digital fashion so far, or Web3 fashion. I also want to make reference to one of the videos that you've posted on YouTube, which is so cool. It's you with sort of a whiteboard, sort of going through this architecture. I'll post a link in the description down below for anyone who's listening and wants to follow up further, because it gives you a full picture of sort of the Web3 industry, all of the, I guess, problem spaces that are in here and all the pain points and everything that DigitalX is sort of building to address those. But the third layer that you mentioned is sort of this digital economy ecosystem and where DigitalX and everything that you're building is sitting inside this ecosystem. So I guess, would you be able to describe what that is at a high level and sort of how DigitalX is sitting within that ecosystem?
Yeah, sure. I mean, to first kind of address what you were saying, I mean, it's our pleasure to build it because it really is essential. You know, it's about making sure that the next iteration of the internet is not the same catastrophe and disaster that Web 2 was. And fashion is so fundamental. I mean, if you think about computation itself, it came from textile production. It's one of these industries that touches everyone. And when we think about the future of it, it's got to be one that is fully decentralized, is owned by everyone that is interacting with it, because if not, it really just becomes a centralized and siloed choke point. So in terms of the kind of, I guess, application environment of, well, how does digital fashion even gain more value, or Web3 fashion, sorry, gain more value and utility? When we think about the metaverse, it really is the immersivity and space itself. I mean, just it being like really what we see a lot of it now in this kind of 2D interface, that's going to change. You know, the metaverse is this persistent environment, something that we can all interact with and kind of fully, how do I say it, and really immerse ourselves in. And so the kind of digital economy component of that is looking at, well, what is the role that fashion will play when we are having these, you know, multidimensional, multi-realm avatars, and then going in and engaging in different quests, communication, relationships within like an open kind of like Web3 environment. And so really what this layer is focused on is, well, after you've produced the fashion, or, you know, sold it as well, after someone's buying or wearing it, what are the ways that they're able to then bring about more value for themselves and also the ecosystem as a whole? So how do incentives align in different application environments? And one of the ways that we're really focused on this is looking at derivatives of play to earn, and like kind of very relevant to fashion is this idea of where to earn. So how do you actually put your fashion to work for you? How does the point of sale between the original designer and creator and then the first buyer and wearer, how is that kind of just the first stage of where the value or yield is generated from that fashion? And so when we think about kind of from the metaverse environment, really what we're focused on is building out this whole indie gaming and modding, or game dev and modding ecosystem, where the content is open source and interoperable between all of these different application environments. So when you have a fashion piece, you can go between realms. And then within these different realms, you can engage in different wear to earn models. So it might be performing a quest, and then depending on the outfit that you have, that actually unlocks a different experience or access or utility to different, say, levels or parts of the game or social environment itself. And what we've actually deployed is two kind of components of that. So one of them is called Esper, and it's our decentralized esports platform. So you can kind of think of it like a metagame architecture whereby players can come on, or users, and they can come on, they can purchase these digital fashion items from our marketplace, and then they take these in-games NFTs, obviously, and then depending on like the rarity level of the item itself, it kind of unlocks different features and quests within that game, and it also kind of affects what yield or payout they can get, or crypto payout they can get for them leveling up and scoring on different leaderboards. And they can build out this like leaderboard status and identity across all of these different games themselves. So that's kind of a really key part. And then the other part of that is also another area, which is called Pode. And this is really focused on like, how does an indie game environment or modding environment really leverage on native Web3 value mechanisms through NFTs, through DeFi, through like, for example, Questware to earn models. And how do they be able to like integrate these value mechanisms into the content itself to then have these like interoperable land environments, which then also create blueprints for metaverse fashion. So making sure that there's like these districts that allow for fashion to be taken, for example, between, you know, like using a Web2 example, but so you can get the point, like Fortnite and then CSGO and Minecraft and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's kind of layer three, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's super exciting. And I think you're going to be paving a way for what that looks like. And it's going to become extremely evident over the course of the next couple of months and I guess next couple of years, especially since the race is on, like you said, between sort of the Web2 metaverse model and the Web3 open metaverse model. So is that where you've been looking at recently, and sort of, I guess, where's a lot of your attention to date with DigitalX, and where are you looking to innovate next?
Sure. Yeah. So the thing with DigitalX is we're very dynamic, and we also fully embrace building within like a transparent open bazaar, which really is what Web3 is. And the best way to build in Web3 is to fully embrace the bazaar model. So it's like build in public, iterate, gain market feedback, and kind of like battle test live in the market, and then take this feedback and then, you know, bring it into the mix and the model and the broader recipe that's being experimented with, and then spit out something else that is really important to building out like just the minimum structures within the ecosystem, because we're not here to boil the ocean. Really, you know, like you said, it's not one product, and definitely protocol stacking environments like Web3, like the blockchain, they do benefit those that create lucrative value conduits, which means if you just have kind of one thing, it really doesn't work. It just creates a really complete ceiling of where you can go. And so we're putting all these building blocks in place so they can bounce off each other and compound off each other, and then ensure when people come into the ecosystem, they can benefit from that also. So in terms of our next approach, well, really what we're focused on now is more of the indie gaming and modding scene, which we just launched IMG, which is the Indie Modders Guild. And it's this like entire community and guild of indie game devs and modders. And we're bringing forth this initiative. We're creating these what are called like Metasource vaults. So all these indie devs and modders, they are creating all of this virtual content, and they're open sourcing it entirely into this like Metasource vault repo that we have that anyone can access. With that, we're then integrating, as I kind of mentioned before, all of these like quest to earn, where to earn models on top of that, which is then going to have complete interoperability with all of the fashion created by the Global Designer Network DAO, which is like all the Web3 indie fashion designers, and really kind of creating these really strong loops within the ecosystem. So there is this way for value to flow, because when you think about, like you said, with Web2, it's really making sure that there is this complete interoperable and liquid value and content layer. And something like Meta with Facebook, that is a complete like top-down catastrophe, where it's really about how do you lock content within the ecosystem and make sure when someone comes in, they can't move out of it, which is the complete opposite of our focus. So yeah, it's really about the immersivity and virtual land side of things that we're really strongly focusing on.
Yeah. And say I'm not an artist, say I'm not a dev, say I don't really have any of those creative skill sets, but I'm super interested in what you're building and I'm super interested in, you know, being involved. How would I do so?
Sure. Yeah, really good question. So, I mean, that's another really important part of the ecosystem approach. It's about how do you reach every stakeholder that is required in order to create an economy, create a market. And, you know, just like from the devil designer side, that isn't enough to be able to maximize and leverage off the full value that is available and kind of there on the table. And so the other key parts are more of this idea of being like, it might sound kind of like a buzzword, which kind of is, but it also gets to the point, like a metaverse dweller, which is really like a player in a sense, but not in the traditional mm-hmm. sense of a player. Instead, it's more like being a user or a fellow kind of owner of the metaverse and the economy. And a key way for that, which is also like, again, about generating value, is really through ESPA and Pode itself. And the way that users and players are able to come in and then use this content, use the fashion assets, and then engage in these different quests to earn where to earn models and gain Mona yield back and other different kind of ERC-20s that we've brought forth under the ecosystem and especially NFTs too. And another part of that is also governance, because that's a really key part of everything that we're building. DigitalX, kind of the umbrella DigitalX, is not a DAO yet. We are progressively decentralizing. So when we launched last year, the team took a 0% allocation of the token. It was is completely fair launch, where everything went to community and staking rewards. And there was just a 10% to the treasury, which we will be decentralizing like over time as well. And that will be controlled and owned by the DAO. But what we are doing is we are kind of DAOifying the subcomponents of the ecosystem, which includes like the Global Designer Network, includes the Indie Modders Guild, includes DigiFizzy, includes Dash and all other components. And then we're also slowly, which we actually just introduced last week, and first proposal went live today, which was this first governance utility for Mona for key parts of the overarching ecosystem. And that's another really key way for people now to come in and have a say in really important verticals of where the protocol and the economy is moving. Is being able to vote through different tokens within the ecosystem.
Yeah. You know, it's great to have someone like you and yourself, Emma, on this Web3 side. I feel like, you know, with you on this side of the race, it's hard to lose. And, you know, with that, yeah, it's gonna be great to see how the digital Web3 fashion continues to grow and how DigitalX plays a role in that. I guess to finish it up and to close it out, what are sort of the best contact points for you if there's a listener that's super interested to dive deeper?
Yeah, so the most active channels for DigitalX is definitely our Twitter, which is DigitalX _, and then myself, I'm EmmaJane1313, and then you can also join the DigitalX Discord channel, and then also our Medium blog, which is really what we keep up to date as well to kind of like notify the community what's going on. But yeah, definitely reach out to us through any of those channels.
Awesome. And then just to close it up, is there anything that you want to say for the listeners? Any last comments?
Sure. I just think what's really important is that we keep making sure to advance Web3 principles at every kind of stage of what we're doing, because it's easy to kind of like fall into the limbo of being complacent that building on blockchain or like minting NFTs and that is Web3, which is it's really not. Being Web3 is about making sure that decentralization itself stays at the heart of everything. So yeah, it's really important. And anything that can be done to keep that at the core is like absolutely amazing. So yeah, prioritize that.
Awesome. Well, cheers, Gemma.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining this Koji conversation. To continue the conversation offline, DM us on Twitter at @Koji_capital. Or reach out to us via email, hello@koji.capital, or jump into our Discord linked in our bio.